Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Chupacabra, UFOs, aliens, Area 51, conspiracies, unsolved crimes, the supernatural. Are they real or are they figments? With your hosts, Colleen and Eddie Medina.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Figments, the podcast where we bring you the unsolved, the unknown, the mysterious, the macabre. Tonight, I'm your host, Colleen Medina, and with me tonight, as always, my hubby poo, Eddie Medina.
How's it going, Figment people?
Oh, I like
Figment
that.
Figment people? Is that?
Yeah, right? Sure.
Okay, sure, why not?
Yeah. Tonight's episode is going to be a little bit different. We've got some fun things to bring you. We're getting ready for AllCon this
week.
We decided to change it up a little bit, get crazy with it, swinging around some, get the hula hoop going.
Getting jiggy with it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Eddie, why don't you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, I had this idea, because again, AllCon's coming up, and we're all just going crazy. The whole Jedi Cole Universe podcasting group, all of us, Andy and Cole, are just stretched thin, and me and Cole on the Rancor Pit. So, Hey Kids Comics, Rancor Pit, Figments, what'd you think with Catherine and Bobby? Plug for everybody. Everybody, we're just going crazy, because all of us are deeply involved with AllCon. We've just been going crazy. So we thought, let's do something fun, and I started racking my brain of something we could do just kind of off the cuff. And what I came up with is a really fun topic. We are going to be talking about Sasquatch 70s cinema.
Woohoo!
That's right. So break out those bell bottoms and those disco records, because we are going back to the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
But more specifically, we're not going to cover everything Bigfoot related from the 70s. We're actually just going to touch on the 70s documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 70s were a great time for, they say, if you can remember it, you weren't there. Was that the 60s? I don't know. I guess that applies to both.
I think that was the 50s.
Whatever.
We were born in the 70s.
Thank you for dating us.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, the 70s, it gave us Watergate and, you know, Star Wars. But, yeah, it also gave us Logan's Run.
Hey.
But Elvis died while Led Zeppelin, you know, rose to the top. You know, recreational things from the 70s ranged from the Pet Rock to Atari giving us Pong, the first home video game console. But it definitely gave birth to a new movie genre, and that was Sasquatch cinema. You know, 67, obviously, especially when the Patterson-Gimlin film hit the public, you know, Bigfoot became such a big thing. So it took Hollywood a few years. But sure enough, by the time the 70s were rolling around, you started getting these documentaries released, either on TV, but mostly in the drive-ins and movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And so Colleen and I are particularly fond of those, especially a few in particular that we remember from our childhood. So tonight we're going to discuss Sasquatch 70s documentaries.
Oh, yeah.
Colleen, why don't you take us into our first one, and also happens to be our favorite.
I would love to. This first one, some of you may have already seen or heard about, and if you haven't seen it, it is a must watch. And mm-hmm. that is an exclamation point. And it is Mysterious Monsters. Now, I had to look at that title because I always call it something different. I always call it Mysterious Creatures.
Yeah. So, flashback to our first episode. We talked about the book and documentary Sasquatch Legend Meets Science, how Colleen always likes to call it, you know, Sasquatch meets Kevin James. Or
I don't. Okay. That's really Kevin James, like, I would pull that name out of
my head. Yeah, it is kind of random, but that's
Mysterious Monsters, I'll just cut you off. Mysterious Monsters was made back in 1976, and it's only a little over an hour. It's hosted by Peter Graves, who many of you guys would remember from Mission Impossible, probably.
Dun, 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 dun,
I love dun, Mission dun, Impossible.
Dun, yeah.
Anyway, but what I mostly like about this documentary is it talks about Bigfoot and it talks about Nessie in both. So I get my two top favorite cryptids in one documentary. I mean, you cannot get better than that. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. It's classic. And again, this is one that we remember as kids. To find it, to discover it years and years later online was just mind-blowing. Because it's one of those things, if you've listened to the Rancor Pit and you've heard Cole and I talk about the Star Wars Holiday Special, how, you know, as a kid, it was awesome to see Star Wars on TV, but then you get older 20-something years later and you see it again, you're like, oh my gosh, that was horrible.
Well, I could have told you that the first time.
Yeah, exactly. But thank goodness Mysterious Monsters doesn't fall into that trap because... It, to me, it still holds up. Yeah, it's got that 70s flair. It's got that sensationalism about it. But it still holds up as just entertaining, fun, and actually informative. They actually have accounts in there that, had they not been covered in Mysterious Monsters, we probably... These would have been accounts, very interesting stories that would have just fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, it's very fun. It's just one of those that's fun to watch and to listen to. And, of course, we know it by heart, so we can put it in and do dishes or laundry. Don't even have to pay attention to it.
Wait. You do dishes and laundry?
Okay, it's your turn next. I do them more than you do, thank you.
I think I just got laundry and dish duty for the next month.
Yeah, I think you did.
It's fun.
Peter Graves, at the very beginning, one of my favorite parts, at the very beginning, before the show even starts, he comes on, and it's just like a nothing behind him background, and he said, "This may be the most shocking film you've ever seen," and I thought, that's so funny, because you're thinking, okay, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I know.
Not that you've ever seen, that you will ever see.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Friday the 13th, Hostel, come on. But back then, times were so much more innocent.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because the 70s gave us Chainsaw Massacre also, they're so innocent. But no, I mean, but it's part of that 70s sensationalism. They build these things up to be like it was going to be the Blair Witch of its day or something. But it is just such an awesome documentary. I mean, they have some of the funniest characters in this thing. There's one point where they get into the whole Nessie thing. They talk to the Reverend Father Brucey, who's...
He's a
clergyman
reverend
there. Yeah, something. Clergyman there that, you know, close to the lock. And so he tells his stories. And it's funny because, again, this is from the 70s. We've seen him in a more recent documentary, much, much older, but still that same gentlemanly charm. You know, he still tells the story pretty much the same ways. His hands are a little bit more arthritic, but, you know, that's okay. But it's wild, and they're just, and there are those moments in the documentary that build up to, like, this, again, this shock factor. Talking about the Loch Ness mystery, they talk about this one guy who was racing his boat. Apparently he was trying to break some sort of record of the fastest boat.
Speed boat racing, yeah.
Something, yeah. Cameras were rolling on him because this was his moment to break the record. And, you know, he's zipping along the lock on the water.
Was it on the water? You sure?
Oh, gosh.
Boat on the water. Oh, I never heard of that before.
Yeah, don't start now. And at one point, they think that he hit the Loch Ness Monster, I guess, one of the humps, excuse me.
Or I think they also think that it might have hit the wake. That the wake was so big.
That makes more sense, yeah, because, yeah, then there'd be blood everywhere.
Yeah,
but, yeah, he hit the wake of the Loch Ness Monster. And that caused, of course, going that fast. You see on film the boat just flips and disintegrates. But what's, I mean, if that's not already, you know, shocking enough, they have to actually add in the sound effects of, you know, the explosion.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. You know they didn't capture that on
and
the actual film.
And he was killed. Like, oh,
yeah. Unfortunately, he was killed. It is a tragic story, but...
Yeah, and you can actually see the front of the boat go down, like, right before it explodes. So, I mean, that may not be anything, but if you're looking at it real closely, or you've seen it a jillion and hundred times like we have, that kind of just adds in a bunch of stuff. It talks about Nessie. It talks about things like that. It talks about, goes into Bigfoot, and it's almost in two different, well, it actually is in two different parts, but it doesn't seem like it.
Well, it's the Bigfoot aspect sandwiches the whole documentary. It starts with Bigfoot.
It does, yeah.
And then it leads into Loch Ness, but then they wrap up Loch Ness in a good amount of time, mm-hmm. and then the whole rest of the documentary is just nothing but Bigfoot goodness, you know, just like all Bigfoot all the time. And so it's just awesome. I mean, what's one of your favorite moments from it? Like, silly or fun factor or just something?
Well, I definitely think the very beginning, before it even actually gets started, is just listening to him say, "This may be the most shocking film you'll ever see." I love that part. But I also like, and I believe it's towards the beginning Bigfoot part, is when this lady has Bigfoot coming into her backyard, and obviously she lives in the woods, and she hears her dog barking, and she opens up her back door, and she makes this face, and it's an older lady, and she's honestly not all that attractive, and so she opens her door, and she's just got this look on her face. She kind
like
of
this, almost like a scowl.
Yeah, she kind of puts her head down in her shoulders, and she's looking, and then you see, what's so funny is you see the guy, that you know, the Bigfoot actor, he's doing the exact same thing back at her.
Yeah.
It looks like they're having a stare off contest.
Yeah, camera switches from her face, a close up on her face to a close up on his. So I almost want to like imagine going back in and digitally taking that shot of her and digitally adding in hair starting to grow like a werewolf, and then her turning into Bigfoot.
Oh, gosh. Those are the two that you call twins, right?
Yeah, they're like twins.
Yeah, because they kind of look alike. I think my other favorite part is, one of them, I mean,
There's so many.
Awesome.
It's such an awesome movie.
But I like the sounds that Alan Berry... I guess it's Alan Berry. It may not be him. It may be another group of guys, but they go camping and they hear the Bigfoot, and so he gets his tape recorder out.
And of course, it's a recreation.
Right. Of course, and he records that, and it's neat to hear what he actually recorded, and it doesn't sound like anything that you can explain.
Yeah, they play the actual recording on the documentary.
Right.
Yeah.
And I like how Peter Graves says, and he reaches for his tape recorder instead of for his rifle, because there's so many people in these documentaries that say, "I had my sights on the Bigfoot, and then I decided not to shoot, or I just realized that if I shoot, would have shot, it would have been murder," and stuff like that. I'm thinking, why? And I mean, I would bring a rifle or something. If I had something to bring, I would definitely bring it. But why would you automatically put your sights on the thing? I mean, there's one documentary that we have that the Bigfoot actor gets so offended and hurt feelings at everyone, because everyone's turning it away. It's just so crazy. And
we'll get into that in a little bit.
But it's, you know, why? If the thing is coming at you, and I guess they're just getting ready in case the thing starts charging them, because it might be too late. But still, and you hear about it happening, like the thing was way far away, and they could only see it really very good in the scope.
Yeah. Okay.
But
Get off your soapbox, Miss Kill No Kill over here.
I think the funniest part is when they're going back and forth with the lovable Grover Krantz and another scientist talking about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And
hold on, I'm sorry, but if we've never mentioned that on past episodes, Grover Krantz, who has since passed away, unfortunately, has been a big name in the Bigfoot field, you know, as far as his research and stuff. And Colleen just loves him, so he's become known as the lovable Grover Krantz in our household.
That's right. Don't ever talk bad about Grover, that's for sure.
Uh-huh.
But they weren't talking together, but the documentary is going back and forth, and the other scientist was kind of trying to disprove that the Patterson footage that we call Rachel is real. And Grover Krantz thinks that it is real. And so there's one point where the scientist says something about her breasts, and Grover Krantz said, "I don't know what a Bigfoot's breasts are supposed to look like."
Like, such an epic line.
Yeah, and especially from him. Here's this old man, and I mean, I guess in the documentary he wasn't that old, but I remember watching it with Sean, my brother, and he about came unglued when we laughing so hard at that part.
I'll tell you, okay, idea that just came to me just now. Mm-hmm. We ever start doing Figments t-shirts for people to buy, one of them has to say that that quote, I don't know what a Bigfoot's breast should look like.
That would be good. So what are your favorite funniest parts? Or
just awesome parts? I don't know. I know. It's like trying to choose your favorite parts from Raiders of the Lost Ark. You just can't.
Well, that's debatable. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, well, toward the beginning, there's this one, of course, 90% of it is recreated from accounts. It opens with this guy taking his little daughter. Guys, here we go.
Sorry.
Yeah, fishing, and they're on the pier, and Bigfoot appears across the lake or the pond, whatever, and it plays out like this, where he says, "We're gonna have some fun, Jenny." And then they put their cast in, and he goes, "Look, what is that? Let's get out of here." You know, they zoom over to the Bigfoot's face, and of course he looks offended, like, "What did I do?"
It's
like,
so
poor
sad.
Bigfoot. I know. Aww. It's like Chewbacca not getting a medal or something.
Oh, don't bring that up. Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But
what's funny is the guy is a huge guy. You know, have you ever noticed how big he is? I'm thinking,
oh, yeah, he's
okay,
massive.
You're scared? Come on. It's not like it's Eddie or anything.
Oh, come on now. But we've had fun with that, and the line I use, I've overdubbed my line over his line of, "What is that?" You know, we'll say, "We're going to have some fun, Jenny." "What the frack?" You know, like, "What is that?" It's stupid, I know, but if you know us, you should not be surprised that we get stupid.
And that comes from what, Battlestar Galactica? Frack?
Neither here nor there.
Yeah, I never watched that. Well, I think a funny moment, a couple of funny moments, and we can move on to other documentaries. Do you remember?
Hey, we should do the whole show on just mysterious monsters.
I know.
It's that epic.
Well, number one, Peter Graves looks exactly like he does in Mission Impossible. He's got the white hair, and he's got the big wing, and
the man was born with white hair.
Yeah,
what are you talking
exactly.
About?
It never moves, and then he's got this awesome, incredibly just tan. And so you're thinking, okay, he's got this white hair that makes his tan stick out even more, and he's just walking around like he owns the place, you know.
He's awesome.
He is awesome. But towards the beginning, I think you'll know what I'm talking about. It's probably that same Bigfoot where the lady and he are having the stare-off contest. They do the casting of the Bigfoot, and then it's dry, and then I guess it's a lady. She steps on it with her foot. And do you remember how small her foot is compared to the casting?
I know.
And we know that big feet, footprints, are huge. But
it's like Godzilla's footprint.
Yeah, it looks
ridiculous. It's huge.
And this is a grown woman. And then, so I think that's always funny. And then, if you're trying to make somebody believe this, then don't use such a big foot, you know?
I know. Okay, I just realized another favorite part of mine. Peter Graves goes to a psychic, Peter Herkos.
Oh, yes.
We are actually going to try to schedule an episode where we do an episode just on Peter Herkos, because he actually has an interesting backstory. He's
really
a psychic
does.
Who has worked with the police department in, like, kidnapping cases and what all. So he goes to Peter Herkos' house, and this guy's got a very heavy accent, I guess maybe German or something. Yeah. Peter Graves just shows up with this briefcase, and like it's Mission Impossible.
Yeah!
And he sits down, and he's...
I never thought of that!
He sits down, he sits down, and he says... He hasn't told him what's in the case. He lays it down, and he goes, "Can you psychometrize what is in this case?" And we just, oh my gosh. And I was like, is that a word, psychometrize? I think we looked it up, and it turns out it really is a word. But it's so funny. Can you psychometrize what's in this case? And, you know, of course, Peter Herkos does the Professor X, where he puts his fingers to his temple, and he's like,
"Oh, I thought that was Spock that did that."
No. Oh. And so, of course, Peter Herkos, you know, does his voodoo or whatever, and he...
Don't say that. Gosh, poor man.
Just playing. And he does, he actually says, big man, hairy, lots of hair, lives in cave. And, you know, so he's kind of saying these little things that would, you know, lend itself to a Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, would you like for me to draw it? So he's in there sketching, and what he sketches is obviously a Bigfoot. Whether or not that was set up, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's interesting.
That was good. Another one of my favorite parts that I think are funny is when the boy scouts go camping.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah, and they're filming them, And, you know, it's probably just, who knows if it's the same Boy Scouts, but...
Oh, I doubt. No, because they talked to the guy grown up. He's telling the story as an adult.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Well, who knows if they're even really real Boy Scouts. So anyway, they're walking up this hill, and it's like a road, but it's, you know, they're coming uphill, and one of them's saying, my boots are killing me, you know, and I'm thinking, what are y'all, a bunch of little girls griping?
They're little brownies.
Yeah, and so, of course, that night, Bigfoot comes into their camp, and literally they start screaming, one of them starts screaming, and it sounds, and I know, you know, their voices haven't changed yet, but it sounds like a little girl in camp screaming. And so, when the guy who's retelling the story, he's...
And again... Bigfoot is, like, offended. He looks at him like, what? I want to come get a s'more.
Yeah,
you know?
He was going through their backpack, and he was just trying to find something to eat. And he's like, why do people keep screaming at me and staring at me like this? What, do I stink or something? But,
well,
So, anyway, the guy that is retelling this story, he's kind of a Mr. Magoo, you know.
He reminds us of the guy on Office Space, you know, my red stapler. Yeah, he reminds us of that.
So, while he's talking and you're seeing him actually talk, he's got this drawing paper and he's actually sketching something and you're thinking, okay, wow, he's pretty good. I mean, you don't see what it is yet, but you're thinking, this is going to be good.
He's like so into it. Yeah. He's like, he's really working it like he's Michelangelo.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just going at it. And he's just thinking, this sucker's going to be so detailed.
Yeah,
and
he's talking and he's sketching at the same time. Man, this is pretty good. And then finally, once the story, he tells the story and he says, and the next morning we went up the hill to where the Bigfoot was and this is what we saw. And he turns it over and it's just the outline of one track. And it fills up the whole page.
It was
and I thought,
drawing pad.
Oh my gosh, what was he working on that entire time? That was ridiculous.
And it's literally just like a horribly drawn just outline of a Bigfoot foot.
Yeah.
It looks like someone drew it with their eyes closed.
Yeah.
It's that bad.
And so not only is the dude, the dude is, you know, stapler.
Nerd.
Yeah. He's, you know, wanting his stapler. He draws this non-immaculate drawing and he turns it around and you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous, you know.
I know. Awesome.
Anyway.
We should probably move on. Please, if you have any liking to Bigfoot or anything like that, find yourself a copy of Mysterious Monsters. It is like the most epic Bigfoot documentary. It's like the Citizen Kane of Bigfoot documentaries.
Where did we find ours? Do you remember? Did we have to
order it? Oh, it's online. And
Mysterious Monsters, hosted by Peter Graves.
Yeah, at first we had to buy a bootleg copy because it wasn't available as a real, you know, release, and then finally re-released it and we got the real deal.
You buy a bootleg? No, not you.
I know, imagine that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so let's move on. Let's search for... In Search of.
Oh my gosh, that's so corny.
Hey, I kind of liked it. In Search of, and I have a neat story to tell about this. This was hosted by Leonard Nimoy. I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen those. Either, I don't know, I guess you could watch them on YouTube, or maybe you remember them from whenever they aired.
If you're our age or older, shame on you if you've never seen In Search of.
But there's some just on Bigfoot, and they're hosted by Leonard Nimoy, and he has this big, black, thick mustache.
I know.
Of him. It's so and, you know, he's got normal-looking hair and ears, so it's really funny to see him as Spock and then go to this. But,
okay, hold on. Let me say this. So... We go from the epicness that is Peter Graves to the epicness that is Leonard Nimoy. It just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I do have to tell my Leonard Nimoy story. You knew I couldn't get out of this
one. Okay, go for it. Go for it.
So a few years ago, we drove up to Oklahoma to go to a convention just to get Leonard Nimoy's autograph. And it was, what, your autograph and my mom's autograph? So we got two.
Yeah.
All right.
Uh-huh.
So we spent more time driving than we did actually there. And,
yeah.
But that was fine. You know, Eddie and I can have fun pretty much anywhere. It really wasn't all that big once we got there. I don't remember it being all that big. But anyway, so I'm sure everybody was telling Spock, telling Leonard Nimoy, hey, I really liked you as Spock, and probably doing the live long and prosper sign and all that stuff.
It was probably like Galaxy Quest, where everybody who went up to his table had to, okay, so the inertial dampers on the Enterprise, like, you know, if they don't work properly, or, and, you know, they're asking about Romulus and Remus and, you know, and all that. So he's probably had it up to his pointed eyebrows with Star Trek.
I forgot about his eyebrows. My dad has Spock eyebrows, but those are an accident. And they're gray. But anyway, so we get up to the table. Eddie puts the stuff down on the table for him to sign, and, you know, we say hi and everything. He's real nice. He's smiling.
Oh, he's
an
awesome person.
You know,
awesome,
yeah, very, very gentlemanly. And I said, I really loved listening to your voice on the In Search of documentaries. And he was like, oh, you know, and he smiled real big. He's like, oh, well, thank you. And then as I walked off, I thought, oh, my gosh, that really sounded creepy. And he's probably calling security on me right now.
But it really didn't. You could see his face light up when she said In Search Of, like, oh, thank goodness someone actually appreciates my other work, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you could see the man's face, and he got the biggest, most genuine smile.
He really did. He really did. But I thought, oh, my gosh, I really like the sound of, or listening to your voice. I just thought, because, you know, you're kind of nervous, and you say these things, and you know.
Yeah, I'm glad I've never done that.
Oh, yeah, Corey Feldman.
Oh!
We love you, Corey!
Oh, yeah. Security. Yeah, I told Corey Feldman. I was so excited to meet Corey Feldman that I said, we love you, Corey, like some teenage girl.
Right after I took my picture with him. And the best thing about that moment was he said, I love you guys, too.
Yeah, he was really cool. He's another cool guy. You know, anybody else, you're like, okay, dude, whatever, move on. But I'm just so excited it came out that way. I was so excited I'm lucky I didn't fart instead.
Oh, gosh. I can't believe how tiny he was. I mean, he was tiny. But anyway, that is really...
Tiny guy, big heart.
Yeah, really off the subject. So anyway, there's my Leonard Nimoy In Search Of story.
So In Search Of, they have four episodes that we know of. There may be more that are specifically geared at Bigfoot. There is an Abominable Snowman episode, an actual, like, you know, Bigfoot in the Pacific Northwest episode, one about monster hunters, one about the swamp monsters. All of them really, just really good, interesting, but funny. The one about the, since we're kind of picking on some of these and pointing out their funny aspects, the Monster Hunters episode is so funny because they focus on one point of this group of guys who they call the Bay City Group, and I started making jokes like they're called, like, the, you know, like they're like an actual gang.
Bay,
you know,
City, like Rollers, gang. Or...
Yeah, the Bay City Crips or something like that. But, you know...
You better watch it. Alan Barry is a big dude. He's going to get you.
I like Alan Barry. Again, he's the guy who recorded the Bigfoot sounds on his tape recorder. But
he towers over everyone.
Yeah, he is Bigfoot, basically. So the main guy is this old dude. and he starts talking about how one night he was out camping by himself, and he was trying to coax Bigfoot into his camp by using the words, ook, 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 old friend, ook. Ook, old friend, fish ook, you know, like, such random, like, literally, if you watch that episode, he's saying fish ook. I don't think they say this particularly in Search Of, but I've looked up, obviously, I look up everything I can, you know, like, backstories on these people. You either heard it in a different documentary he spoke in, or just maybe an online, you know, article, that he said that he got the word ook from the local tribes, because that was their way of communicating with Sasquatch, and so... As a favor to this man, they give him this word to say at random out in the woods so he can call it, he can coax Bigfoot into his camp so he can see him. And I told Colleen, it's like, you know what? They're probably thinking, let's mess with this dude and just tell him, give him some random, let's say, ook. Say ook out in the woods and Sasquatch will come see you. So they're probably like, you know, we're going to see if he falls for it. And so he's out there and he talks so seriously that he's out there saying, ook, ook, old friend. And, of course, according to him, you know, it's at night. Bigfoot comes into his camp, so he goes to his car. Was it that he got his camera, but the camera didn't have film?
No. I believe, because we just watched this the other day, he put his flashlight down, I believe, to pick up his camera. And when he, in the time that he put it down and picked up, to look up, it was gone.
Yeah, something.
It was something like that, because I remember just hearing it and hearing him talk, and he said, and by the time, which was probably just a few seconds, I raised my camera or my flashlight again to see where he was so I could take a picture, he was gone. And I remember thinking this whenever we were talking about the UFO story last time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I remember saying that I did not want to look away because I knew if I looked down to grab my phone to take a picture, it would be gone, you know. So that's kind of a good example right there.
Another episode is the Swamp Monsters one, and I really like this episode because it introduced me to the story of the Honey Island Swamp Monster,
mm-hmm.
and I had never heard about it all these years looking up stuff about Bigfoot. This is a really interesting story.
I've never heard it either. It's like Honey Island Swamp, what's that?
We hadn't heard about it until we got this documentary called The Legend of the Honey Island Swamp Monster, which is actually written and directed and hosted by his granddaughter, the guy's granddaughter who gives the account. Is his name Harlan Ford?
Oh, that's what I was thinking. I know his first name is Harlan.
Okay, I think it's Harlan Ford, but forgive us if we got it wrong. But
and Honey Island Swamp, is that in Louisiana?
Yeah, so we're going to do a whole episode on the Louisiana Honey Island Swamp Monster, but yeah, there's this episode talks to him,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he unfortunately has passed on since his granddaughter is doing the documentary mm-hmm. later on in life. But it's neat because you actually get to see him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we heard about him in his granddaughter's documentary, but then to discover this episode of In Search Of and to actually see the man and talk about it, it's like, wow, you know, that's him. That's, you know, and it seems like a really genuine, honest dude.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I really like his voice. One thing that I like about these documentaries is I find people whose voices I really like. Peter Graves, I like his voice. Leonard Nimoy, I like his voice. And that's just me. I think a lot of times because I like to, and this is going to sound nerdy, but I'm proud of it, I like to fall asleep with these things going.
Yeah, I like to fall asleep with Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, exactly. And he's whispering sweet nothings in my ear. Maybe that's why Velcro's always growling. But we set the TV timer, and because sometimes I don't fall most of the time I don't fall asleep right away, or I think I don't. If it's too quiet, I need some background noise. And so we'll put one in and we'll set the TV timer so it's not going all night.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll listen to these documentaries as we're falling asleep. So anyway,
for me, it helps to drown out Colleen's snoring, you know, so.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I don't think I'm the one that's the problem. Good night. There's nothing more. Oh, okay, anyway, that could be another episode. But Harlan Ford,
the comparison between our snoring and the sounds of Sasquatch.
But anyway, I noticed that Harlan Ford, he sounds just really, really, he's got this low kind of booming voice, and he sounds like a true cowboy. Kind of reminds me of Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin. And I really like hearing, and I was just watching that episode the other day, too. I really like hearing his account and everything. And I think he even came on and said, you know, if you don't want to believe it, that's fine. And if you want to believe it, that's fine, too. But
we've said this before, but these people, they don't earn anything, fame, money, nothing on these. They're just telling their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds funny that you say that, I like their voices, but I get what you mean, because you can listen to some of these people, kind of really get the sense that they're telling the truth because of the way they're recounting the story. Like, mm-hmm. they're just, look, guys, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell their story. If you want to believe it, fine. If not, that's cool. It's like there's something about listening to them tell the story that you think, you know, that, yeah, of course, they could be, you know, really good at faking people out. But you're like, you kind of get the sense that, yeah, they're sound like a genuine, honest working guy that just wants to tell his story.
Well, and he was so far out where no one was going to be. And there's
he's like a trapper or something.
There's actually footage of it. It's not much, you don't see much, but what you see kind of makes you think, and especially if you're able to zoom in, it looks big. And to me, when you see just a smidgen of something, I guess when it's covered up with trees and stuff, it's like that's the best they could get. It almost seems like, you know, that almost makes it a little bit more real. And I know Rachel was right out in the open that is just fluke. I mean, you know, luck right there. But, you know, there was a creek, so she was either drinking or probably washing her feet or hands or whatever, and that's why it was so open there. But now it's really grown up. I mean, it doesn't even look like the same place. So if it were to happen now, the Bigfoot probably would be covered with a bunch of trees, and it would be hard to see. So mm-hmm. you only see a little bit of it, and again, like you were saying, he just seems so sincere about it, and especially when he's talking about, you know, if you want to believe it, that's fine, and if you don't want to believe it, that's fine too. And
well, the interesting thing about the In Search of episodes, and I couldn't figure out which one came first. It's like the chicken or the egg. The producer, Alan Lansbird, also did, I don't know if it was a TV special or if it was released in the theaters, because I couldn't find much information about it. It's called Man Beast, and it's basically almost like either a longer extended episode of the Bigfoot episodes of In Search Of, or maybe it was a theatrical release of that was basically In Search Of but theatrical release. And
yeah.
It's really good. It's kind of another funny story about that is the DVD we have of that. It just, the disc has a picture of Peter Byrne, who is a Bigfoot investigator. Those who are steeped in cryptozoology knows right off who Peter Byrne is. But for those who don't, Peter Byrne is like one of the four big, I guess, like the horsemen of cryptozoology.
Mm-hmm.
You got four who have been there from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and he's one of them. And the disc has a picture of Peter Byrne, and it says at the top of the disc, Peter Byrne, and then underneath it says Man Beast. And I pulled the disc out of the box. I was like, I was not aware that Peter Byrne had done a porno.
No, you did not. This old man, this old geezer.
He's not old in the movie.
Well, he's old enough.
He's still virile, I guess, but he's like, Peter Byrne is the Man Beast.
Well, what's funny with that is my brother Sean likes hearing his voice.
I just love, hey, Mr. Man Beast, I love listening to your voice.
He's got his British or English accent, and he does sound pretty neat.
And oh, yeah.
Very
yeah.
well spoken and everything, but Sean is
exactly.
always wanting to borrow. Hey, can I borrow the documentaries with Peter Byrne where he narrates? And
yeah.
We've got a few, but I just think it's funny that yeah. I was talking about voices and you brought that up, and that reminded me, oh, yeah, Sean likes his voice. So, yeah, I do remember in this Man Beast.
Hold on. So, Alan Lansbird.
Oh, yeah.
This. And if you don't know, Alan Lansbird was also the genius who gave us such classics as Jaws 3D.
Yeah.
And Porky's too. So they, you know, add to his vast collection of masterpieces, you can add in Man Beast. go ahead, Colleen, what you were saying?
I was just gonna say, I do remember in Man Beast, that's really hard for me to say now.
I know, without laughing.
In
Man
the Peter Byrne documentary.
Man Beast.
I do remember some of the same footage that we saw in one of the In Search Ofs. Well, I would like to kind of research that a little bit more and figure out what was going on there, because it's either the exact same footage or recreated to look exactly the same. He's talking about the same things.
There was one segment in both Man Beast, Peter Byrne as the Man Beast, and In Search Of, the episode where they talk about the Abominable Snowman, where Peter Byrne, a.k.a. the Man Beast,
goes
to go see the llama. I don't know if it's not the Dalai Lama, but it's like whatever llama resides over Tibet, or I don't quite know how that all works.
Yeah.
He goes to see whatever llama is there.
Sounds funny, too.
Not the animal.
Okay, how do you know?
The person. Obviously, to get an audience with the llama, it's a big deal. So the reasoning there was, I guess he went to go talk to him, and they were able to talk to him about the Yeti, and they got their footage. So what they did is they actually used the exact same footage that he got to speak with him in both In Search Of
mm-hmm.
and in Man Beast, a.k.a. Peter Byrne.
And that little
but there's other
man
things in it. Like the Alan Berry thing is also repeated in both. There's a few things that are repeated from In Search Of mm-hmm. to Man Beast, a.k.a. Peter Byrne.
Gosh.
But there's also, because it's like, it's a little over an hour, there's also a ton that's brand new. But it is interesting, because it's got the In Search Of feel minus mm-hmm. Leonard Nimoy.
I know. I do think the part with Alan Berry, it might be recreated. It didn't look the same. But, I mean, it was close enough, but it doesn't really matter. But the little Dalai Lama guy, he's so cute. Remember him sitting in there? He's holding like, this little thing, and he's talking to...
Every time he answers, he's like,
Yaw. And he's talking about where they've seen Bigfoot, or when he's like, the wheat fields and the corn fields. I mean, he's trying the best he can, and he's just so cute.
Potato fields. Yeah, he is. But, okay, so Man-Beast, a.k.a. Peter this is the documentary that focuses on the sad Bigfoot, the offended Bigfoot.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
We got to touch on that.
Okay, so the first time I noticed that he got offended
I'm sorry. We're getting so excited. This is what we're going to be jumping around back and forth. But when you see In Search Of or Man-Beast, a.k.a. Peter Byrne, They did a really good job of creating these Bigfoot costumes for these actors, with the exception they're not bulky. Mm-hmm. They're kind of actually lanky Bigfoots, but they're really good costumes.
They almost
like Jim Carrey's Grinch costume, but instead of green, they're brown. They kind of have like the big booties and, you know, the
long legs. Hair. There's one actor that you don't really see. I don't think you see his face, but you see him like in distance. They don't really focus on his face, but he's got long legs. And so when he's kind of like slow, I guess, jogging or running, he's got a long stride. So you're thinking, wow, he really could be a Bigfoot.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what the thing is about these two things, In Search Of a Man-Beast,
a.k.a.
Peter Byrne. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Is they really focus on the Bigfoots. They really stick them in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they show their faces. And I don't know, to me, the faces kind of look like the gorillas from Planet of the Apes. But anyway, so you can really see when the offended Bigfoot gets his feelings hurt and he gets offended, you could actually see the offense on his face, you know.
Well, the first one that I remember, and I remember watching it with you for the first time, I felt so sad that he got offended. He's walking up on this guy at the... It's not Peter Byrne, is it?
No,
he's never seen one. And that's right. Peter Byrne has been on the quest for Bigfoot for years. He went on a 10-year-long expedition out in the mountains and has found tracks but has never found and heard Bigfoot but has never actually seen Bigfoot, which I think is pretty sad for him. But I think he has a pretty good attitude about it, that he's just going to keep trying, and if, you know, he never sees it, that's fine.
Hey, man, the Man-Beast can handle it. Don't worry about the Man-Beast.
The Man-Beast can handle himself, really?
Yeah. Oh, gross.
Well, you said it. So anyway, Bigfoot's coming up on this guy who's at his campfire, and the guy is kind of, whoever it is, the man is kind of moved away from his campfire a little bit, and Bigfoot's just coming up, and he's looking at his stuff, and so the guy turns around.
No, he picks
and
up.
Yeah,
the
he picks up.
His, picks up.
Oh, yeah, so. He picks up. No, he does. He picks up something, and he's looking. Was it the teapot or the coffee?
No, water? He picked up a smoldering piece of wood and burned himself.
Oh, he did. Oh, okay. And so the guy gets scared, and he picks up his rifle, and he's putting his sights on the Bigfoot, and the Bigfoot's just looking at him like, why do you want to shoot me?
He looks so sad.
He does. And the guy looks at him, you know, and they have this moment, so he starts putting his rifle down, and the Bigfoot just kind of slowly turns and he walks away. What makes it classic is as he's walking away, he looks back at the man.
Like, over his shoulder, like, it's like you just expect the song to come up, the, nothing is sadder than the tears of a Sasquatch or something. It's so sad.
It is. You just want the man to say, no, ook, old friend, come back.
Ook, old friend, classic. I love it. Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Do you remember,
ook, old friend.
I know.
Fish ook.
I know, here's some fish. So, do you remember the ladies that are fishing at the stream?
And, no.
Okay, so there's ladies, these two ladies fishing at the stream. I guess they're...
Oh, yes, yeah, yes,
yeah.
That's right.
And so one kind of moves on down the stream, I guess, to, you know, because you always have to separate yourselves from...
You don't want to cross the streams, Ray.
No, you don't, no.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she, you know, in movies... there always has to be a time where the person is alone. You know, stick together.
Yeah.
Keep the buddy system. I'm at a roaring rapid stream, but oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay here by myself.
It applies in horror movies. It also applies in 70s Sasquatch cinema.
It does. You never know. I mean, you don't. You never know.
It's funny. I know you were joking, but now I think about some of these other documentaries, something always happens when everybody else clears away, and there's just like that one in Mysterious Monsters with the Indian youth advisor guy, John, who's also named John Green. Remember, he's by himself. His friends go off, and he's by himself.
Yeah, still as fish.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway. I'm telling you. Her friend goes on, and she's still fishing, and obviously she has her back to the woods. So Bigfoot kind of creeps on up, and doesn't he, I think he
being
trips.
A creeper.
Yeah, he's being a creeper, but he trips or something, or steps on a rock, and it makes some noise, and she turns around.
Yeah.
She's looking at him, and he's looking at her, and so she picks up her rifle, and I'm thinking, what? Why are people so adamant about shooting this poor thing? So she's got her sights on him, and he's just looking at her.
You know what? Oh, my gosh, revelation. That's why we don't have Bigfoots, or probably not very many Bigfoots in Texas, because we're so gun crazy in Texas. We're just shooting these Bigfoots left and right and picking them off.
Exactly, I know. So I think she starts to lower her rifle, and he's looking at her all hurt.
Offended,
hurt, you know, his feelings got hurt. So he turns around, and he goes back into the woods. That one wasn't as dramatic, but it was even more sad because Bigfoot got offended or got his feelings hurt by what could have been his first date.
Oh, my God!
Seriously. I mean, he hasn't had love. He has never found love. All he was wanting was, you know, just a little friend.
Really? You're going to take it there?
What?
Interspecies erotica?
I never said anything about that.
We should probably move on. There, a man beast, a.k.a. Peter Berg, is also a good one.
Yeah, it is a good one.
Hey, let's talk about The Force Beyond. That would be a quickie, because Force Beyond is another one of these sensationalized 70s documentaries. It actually focuses on different things like Atlantis, UFOs, Bigfoot, and Loch Ness. But the Bigfoot segment, it's very short, but again, it's got Peter Berg, the man beast. And he's really popular in these. He's almost like the Dick Clark of the cryptozoology world. He's like in everything.
But he actually ages.
Oh,
yes. And, so, and Peter Byrne, I mean, we love you, Peter Byrne, but he always dresses the same. It's almost like he's always some sort of version of Indiana Jones.
Yeah. So Force Beyond, they're talking to him about Bigfoot, and they're going through this and the other. But the interesting thing about the segment in Force Beyond is they show this footage that I have not seen anywhere else in any other documentary. It was taken by an attorney who wants to remain anonymous. Mm-hmm. And the footage, of course, it's stock film, like the 8mm. He's zooming, he's far away, but you see the water, you see this very tall grass, and you see this black figure, this big hairy type figure, mm-hmm, walking through. Of course, the film stock is not the best, so it's a little bit off, but he zooms in with his camera, and you see this thing. It kind of, you can kind of see a conical shaped head.
You can.
It kind of seems like it's got wide shoulders. Mm-hmm. There's not enough there to really honestly determine one way or the other, but it is still interesting because you see this thing kind of move through the grass, and the way he describes it is it was almost like a gazelle. It moved very gracefully, mm-hmm, and you hear a lot. You hear that a lot in these accounts where people say it moved very gracefully. It was very confident. Mm-hmm. When it moved through the woods, it's like their heads, people describe it as like their head maybe stays stationary and the body moves under the head.
Someone
like,
described it as a stag with an enormous rack. Moving.
That's the enormous rack is exactly what the man beast is looking for.
Oh, shut up already. Walking, but his horns are not moving everywhere. His horns are staying stationary. His horns are staying stationary. And that's a good point, because you see some of these supposed Bigfoots, and they're running, and you think, okay, they're never looking down. They're looking straight ahead, like the Memorial Day footage. And, of course, because if it's real, it's traversed that mountain many, many times. It doesn't need to know where it's going. It already knows. It doesn't need to know that there's a big rock there because it already knows. It's not going to be bumbling around like Jason in Friday the 13th Part 2.
Nice reference.
Wasn't that nice? Yeah. It's going to move however much gracefully a Bigfoot can move.
We don't know how graceful a Bigfoot's supposed to move. Or with their breasts.
Yeah, how graceful their breasts are.
But that's Force Beyond. And the thing was that a little bit I have heard about this film segment in Force Beyond is the reason why people don't care to put much stock into that footage is because they automatically say, here we go with the naysayers. You know I hate the naysayers. They automatically want to say that it's fake because if it was real, this person would not remain anonymous. And I was like, that's not true.
Yeah.
This guy's an attorney. Mm-hmm. He probably doesn't want to lose his job at the firm.
Exactly.
But he also wants to share his story. Let's talk about Bigfoot, man, or beast, not to be confused with the man-beast. Actually, Peter Burton is in this one, too. I tell you, man, he's like the Dick Clark of these movies. Mm. He's in all of them.
Yeah.
So Bigfoot, man, or beast. You know, it's another good one. It's not as interesting. Definitely nothing can touch mysterious monsters.
Oh, no.
But it's not as interesting as, like, Man Beast or In Search Of or some of these others. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely up there. It's definitely one that you want to put in and watch, and it's fun and it's interesting. Oh, is this the one? Yes. Okay, this is a funny thing about this particular one. It starts off with their host, who's the poor man's Peter Graves. Like, literally, I think he's got white hair. He's got white hair and everything, but he's like Seymour Graves or something.
Aww.
He's not. Yeah. So it's the poor man's Peter Graves, and he's talking. And he's sitting in the camp of these Bigfoot hunters. They have their tents and they have their campfire and they got their truck. Well, this one knucklehead comes driving through on this, like, it's literally a miniature tank. It's on tank treads, but it's like a go-kart that's been modified to be a tank.
And it's got all this smoke coming out of it.
Yes, it's got the worst exhaust. It's like this. Smoke is just pouring out of the exhaust pipe, and it's loud, and it's going through, and the guy he shuts it off, the driver, and gets out, and apparently this is some tank thing that they were actually, this is what we're going to use to find Bigfoot, we're going to drive, this is all terrain, so we can go deep in the woods on this and find Bigfoot. Yeah, Bigfoot, a deaf Bigfoot could hear that coming a mile away. This thing is so noisy and smoky that it's Bigfoot is going to see this thing.
Stick around for that.
I know, no. It's hilarious. But what's so funny is the guy, the driver to this go-kart tank thing, he gets out and he starts to talk about the things that they plan to do, how they plan to track Bigfoot. And one of the other camp members is in the background. He starts to turn on a chainsaw, and the guy, this is in the film, this was not cut out. The guy has to turn on and said, hey, Joe, could you cut that for a minute so we could talk? He gets offended at the guy who started the chainsaw, and I'm thinking, your tank was 10 times louder than that chainsaw.
Yeah, but he wasn't trying to talk at that time.
I know. Well, he was driving while Peter Graves's, you know, the Peter Graves ripoff was talking.
Well, that's different.
But this one is interesting. It's like I said, it's got Peter Byrne, the man beast. It's also got Robert Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
Who Robert Morgan actually shows up in Mysterious Monsters and a couple other documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
But Robert Morgan is actually an investigator who, he's the one that they focus on the most in this documentary.
Yeah, especially towards the end of it.
And let me say this, if you have to pick out Robert Morgan out of a crowded room, look for the guy that looks like the head elf from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
No, you didn't just do that. But yes, that is very true.
Oh, wait a second. You're friends with him, aren't you?
Uh-huh, I am.
Okay, well, you know what? If he's listening, on the chance that he's listening, I'm sure he's got a sense of humor. Hey, people, when I was in junior high, people were saying I look like Ralph Macchio from The Karate Kid. If I can have a good sense of humor about that, he can have a good sense of humor about this.
Well, sure, yeah.
But anyway.
I think he could still beat you up, but
yeah. Well, anybody. I mean, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer could beat me
up.
That's
true.
Yeah, the little dentist elf in Rudolph could beat me up.
I think he already has. Yeah, they do focus a lot on Robert Morgan and his crew towards the end. And they're out in the woods, and they're, you know, having big fires. And there was one point where he and, I guess, just one guy that he was with were going to go off, and they asked the camera crew to stay behind because it was, was that treacherous. And when they came back, Robert Morgan was actually, his ribs were wrapped up because he had taken a fall. And so I kind of like, they didn't really go into detail, but I'd kind of like to know what happened there. But it is kind of sad because towards the end, a forest fire started, and forest fires are always sad. That happened, and that just kind of put a damper and just pretty much put a stop to their quest for Bigfoot, and they were really upset. And you know,
you know
that they're upset about the fire, obviously, because they're wildlife lovers too. But they're also upset because they know that they were on. I think they were going about to go through Ape Canyon, and they had just been researching for years that this is where we need to be, and all of a sudden this fire breaks out, and it's going to drive Bigfoot out of that area. They don't know if he's going to go left or right. I mean, they have no idea. Feel bad for them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it kind of cut their... because they were on a long quest, too. I'm glad you brought up Ape Canyon, because that's actually one that is covered in some of these 70s documentaries, but it was also covered in one of the episodes of In Search Of, and we didn't touch on that. Mm-hmm. For those who may not know, Ape Canyon is an old story where these miners, mm-hmm. you know, they were coming home for the day, and, you know, back in the day, it's not like they all came back to their trucks and drove home. They were out in the deep woods.
Yeah, they stayed out there until they actually came home.
Yeah, when they were done with their job, then they came home. They would all stay in a cabin, mm-hmm. and this cabin was in this canyon. So lo and behold, there's one night where they come home, they're asleep, and by their account, Bigfoot's surrounded them from up high and started chucking boulders and rocks mm-hmm. down at the cabin, and it literally, it's a pretty well-known story. Mm-hmm. It turned into basically these guys were fighting for their lives. This is one of the few accounts we have where Bigfoot is the aggressor.
Right.
Actually, by Bigfoot's point of view, man is the aggressor because man is the one that's coming into his territory.
Exactly.
But this is an account where Bigfoot actually fights back and gets aggressive. Mm-hmm. They're chucking rocks and boulders at this cabin, and these miners are firing their rifles blindly, mm-hmm. obviously, because they can't see in the dark what they're hitting, but they're trying to aim at. But they're just, I guess, more firing their guns off on the chance that they would either hit one or scare them off.
Yeah. They never found anything. They just
Footprints. Footprints, they never found any blood or anything. Mm-hmm. So lo and behold, this is going on through a good portion of the night. So it's from their telling of the story, they were in fear of their lives mm-hmm. all night until daybreak. And when daybreak came, they went out and that's when they knew the coast was clear, and boy, I imagine they skedaddled out of there they shimmied out of there pretty quickly.
Oh, no, not shimmied again. These are miners. They don't shimmy. Good grief. But, you know, you do hear of accounts where big feet have thrown rocks. I mean,
all the time.
Jeff Meldrum was out somewhere on an expedition, and rocks were thrown at his cabin. So you hear about that, or you hear about stones being thrown into a river close by, and the people, like, at night and they can only hear it, they can't see anything. But these were actual boulders, and weren't they also throwing something else, some equipment that they had, like...
No, that's that logger story where they were... one of these old documentaries covers a story where loggers had their equipment out, and they were cutting down the trees and all. When they came back the next morning, everything was thrown around. 50-pound drums of oil were thrown around like toys.
I remember that one, too, but I thought this one they were throwing around stuff other than boulders, but...
I'm not sure how much... I don't think they had big equipment out there. Okay. They just, like, hand tools.
Well, I mean, big boulders are big enough. That's enough.
Yeah. And we're not talking about, like, boulders like Indiana Jones or anything, but, like, yeah, big boulders, like, you know, something. Yeah, that was that. Let's talk very briefly, because this is an annoying one, The Legend of Bigfoot by Ivan Marks.
Oh, no, not Ivan Marks.
The documentary itself is boring. It's not a whole lot that is even worth watching. So on the filmmaking part of it, you really should not bother. Well, there's some nice wildlife footage. Ivan Marks, who, those who don't realize, is a hoaxer,
mm-hmm.
has come forward with this footage, which is shown in the documentary. It's the feature focal point of the documentary, of this Bigfoot who he claims is limping away. The thing is, it's come out later, at least we are 100%, not 100%, like 90% sure this is how it played off, that it's Ivan Marks dressed up in a monkey suit, walking through, and his wife is filming him, because mm-hmm. apparently his wife was in on a lot of the hoaxing, mm-hmm. too. But the footage in question is this thing, you know, it's limping away, it's kind of bounding away through this rocky open field, and it goes under a branch, and it goes, and you see the branch that it touches, and it goes off into the woods. Well, his story was that apparently some conductor called in a report to him that the train had hit a Bigfoot, not hit it head on, but like, you know,
scuffed grazed it, yeah.
Yeah, grazed it. Hit a Bigfoot. And so he drove out to the area and started tracking where from the point where it was supposedly hit by this train and tracked it. And by the time he caught up to it, he was able to film it limping through this open area. Okay, this is what I have a problem with. Other than the fact that this guy, it's come out that this guy has had a history of hoaxing with photographs and this, that, and the
He's
other.
He's passed away now, isn't he?
Yeah. What I have a problem with is if he was able to track and catch up to this thing days after the fact, then if you've caught up to it and you're right there with it and you're filming it walking across this open field, you've already managed to catch up with it after it's had a couple of days head start. Why are you not able to continue following it, mm-hmm. and filming it more?
Yeah.
But no, he doesn't. He just films it for those few seconds. It goes into the brush. Oh, well, it's in the brush. I can't find it now. Mm-hmm. Bull, you followed it up to that point according mm-hmm. to you. According to you.
Yes.
This is the other thing I have a problem with.
Someone's getting a little mad.
Oh, the hoaxers, they're right up there with the naysayers.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the other problem I have. When you're watching it, if you were just to watch it and not realize that he claims later that it was limping, that's why it moves mm-hmm. so odd. As it's walking, it's kind of hunched over. It's kind of got its arms out, almost like a chimpanzee.
It looks like it would be in a cast.
Apparently it's holding something or something.
I don't know, but it looks, it's like up, halfway up, bent, and it looks as if the arm is in a cast where it can't
move
anything. Like the arm got broken or something. It's ridiculous looking.
And he's kind of bouncing around as he's walking away, mm-hmm. and then I realized, this thing reminds me of the way Cornelius moves in Planet of the Apes. Mm-hmm. Ivan Marks filmed this at the time that Planet of the Apes was popular. Planet of the Apes had already been out for a few years, and that was like the rage. You know, Star Wars hadn't come out, so the only big pop culture thing at the time before Star Wars and Jaws was Planet of the Apes. When you see this film, you know, the mindset of the time when you think of upright apes, you're thinking of Planet of the Apes. So if you're going to hoax a film, then obviously you're going to draw on what you're familiar with. And at the time that he made this film, the big thing was Planet of the Apes, so I'm thinking, shoot, man, this thing looks like Cornelius, the way it's moving, which makes sense that it's fake, because it's like you're drawing on what you're familiar with at the time.
Yeah, and this came out in 76. When did Planet of the Apes come out?
I can't remember the exact date, but it was this came out after Planet of the Apes. I think Planet of the Apes was like 68 or 69.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that kind
of... No. Actually, I think it may predate that, because they say that the person who worked on Planet of the Apes did the Patterson footage. Like, for those who said the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot is fake, they said it was that costume.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Quote, costume was created by the Planet of the Apes person. Yeah. I think Planet of the Apes was late 60s.
Yeah, and Patterson footage came out in 67.
But you're also talking about Planet of the Apes had 4 sequels. So Planet of the Apes ran through the 70s. It was still a big thing through the 70s.
I was just going to say, another thing about the footage is not only is he known to be a hoax, he's claiming that this Bigfoot was ginormous, and that branch was, I don't know, 7-8 feet up in the air. Well, people who were investigating him, who were kind
Peter
of...
Byrne.
Okay,
Peter
was it Peter Byrne?
Yeah, the man beast. You don't
they
know this man.
They went out thinking that something was amiss. Whatever. And they went out to the exact location. They said that that branch that the Bigfoot touched, and, you know, that branch was 7-8 feet up in the air. That branch was only like
6 feet.
Yeah, barely 6 feet
ground.
Off the ground.
Just like under 6 foot or six
so
foot.
So a normal person could have reached up and touched that thing.
You're actually being generous, because I think Ivan Marks actually claimed that it was like something like 10 or 11 feet off the ground,
oh,
that branch.
Sugar.
It was something ridiculous. This is a story with just real quick about Ivan Marks. We know he's a hoaxer because he had this film of Cornelius. And the company or whoever paid him a good sum of money for this film. So he delivered the film to this company. And
big no-no.
When they put in, and apparently this is kind of sad. He actually lived in like a little kind of rundown shack. He sent in the film. When they opened the film can and they popped the thing onto the projector, it was some old Mickey Mouse cartoon. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even the film that they paid for. Mm-hmm. So when they sent their people out to his house to say, hey, man, what's up? They get to his house and he has moved out and he has skipped town.
Yeah.
So that is shadiness all around. So
yeah, and that's one thing that I cannot stand. I cannot stand people like that who, you know, obviously he was wanting to make money and he was really trying to, at least he was actually trying. I hate going on YouTube and real Sasquatch footage and of obviously you click on it thinking, oh, okay, what am I going to see? And it's obviously fake and it's even a parody or something. I can't stand that. But one thing I will say about Ivan Marks, he is a very good speaker. I don't know if you thought the same thing, but I remember when I watched it, I thought...
I'll give him that. That's the only thing I'll concede.
He speaks very well. I wouldn't say that his voice is a comforting one to me, like other voices I've mentioned, but it's not that it's not comforting. It's just the way he speaks. He could do that for a living. It was very well, I guess, written. You know, it also has to be a good narration, and it was. So uh-huh. I will definitely give him that.
I'll concede that. Unlike you, he gets to the point. What? No. Whoa.
You want me to get to the point right now?
Oh, no, this is PG rated.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to last, but definitely not least.
This may not be our favorite, but is definitely a close second. But
yeah.
To the public at large, this next one is the granddaddy of Sasquatch documentaries, mm-hmm. of Sasquatch cinema in general, whether it's a documentary or a movie. This is the granddaddy of them all, and that would be, Colleen?
The Legend of Boggy Creek.
Oh, yeah. definitely a very, very close second to in our book to Mysterious Monsters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it could be right up there with it. It's got great music to me. It's got even some singing. Hey, Travis Crabtree, do you see what I see? Okay, I thought you were going to stop me before that.
No, I wanted to see how long you were going to get.
You know, okay.
Erica and Warren, if y'all are listening, that singing was for
that
you.
That was
apparently,
for you guys.
Yeah, because apparently y'all really enjoyed our singing from the first episode.
So The Legend of Boggy Creek is a true story. I like this documentary because it goes through many, many different accounts. It's not just one story. It's not just one legend. It's a bunch of people talking about what they've seen and what they've heard. And some of it's not even seen a Bigfoot. I know there was one rancher who
stepped in Bigfoot poop or something, right?
He was raising cows, pigs.
no acknowledgement of that.
No. And I think he was showing them, he was raising them to show or something. I'm not quite
sure. Oh, yeah, yeah, his
but
pigs.
But they were, you know, he called them hogs, and they were at least 100 pounds each. And so he had gone out there, and he saw some buzzards flying around, and he had noticed that his hogs were killed. And mm-hmm. so he, you know, kind of dragged them on out to where, you know, the smell wouldn't creep up to the house.
Yeah.
And so I think he said either later on that day or the next morning he went out there and there was nothing there. It didn't even look like the ground had been touched, but those hogs were gone. And he said whatever it was, you know, had to, because buzzards wouldn't, I mean, they would have left a carcass there if they would have mm-hmm. eaten them. So whatever it was had to have carried both of those hogs off of his property over this fence even. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. It was an account that he didn't see or hear anything, but he kind of had a feeling that something just wasn't right, that it wasn't just a typical kill and eat. Dine.
Whatever got these hogs had to lift up these 100-pound hogs over the fence and take them off, take them away. So that's pretty impressive.
Right.
But yeah, man, Legend of Boggy Creek. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. It was like, apparently it was just known for dominating the drive-ins in the
70s. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. It's definitely intense. A lot of people remember it being an intense mm-hmm. movie. And it definitely is, of course, watching it now by our today's standards. It's not as intense, but for that mindset of that era, it was pretty intense. It was actually done by Chuck Pierce, who, if I'm not mistaken, has also done other pretty well-made movies. And if Boggy Creek did have a couple of follow-ups, which are not as good.
No, they're more like movies.
For entertainment. This is actually a docudrama.
Yeah.
Whereas the sequels were just fictional, just for the sake of having, capitalizing on the name Boggy Creek.
Well, talking about it being creepy, or, people were creeped out, a little creeped out by it. I mean, that it's based on a true story. And mm-hmm. not only that, but the posters, the movie posters, and what you see on the DVD cover, this swamp, it's the Boggy Creek monster, and he's hunched over, and he looks like he's charging whoever took the picture. I mean, it's not a picture, but whoever is, I guess you, because it's coming at you. It's just creepy looking.
It reminds me of the old 70s monster magazine covers where you would have, like, Frankenstein or the Wolfman kind of hunched over mm-hmm. to one side, like, one arm was down, one arm would be up.
Yeah.
It was like that body language reminds me of the old monster magazines from the 70s.
Well, the Boggy Creek monster is actually kind of walking like a zombie. I mean, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
But not only,
I like how you give yourself a compliment.
I know. But not only that when you first put the disc in and it's on the menu, the noises, the animal noises that you hear, it's pretty cool. Then the opening scene
is
the little boy who's actually, he's grown up narrating the movie. He's the man narrating the movie, but I mean, he's supposed to, the little boy is him grown up. Anyway, so the opening scene is him. It's this kind of dramatic music. I can hear it right now in my mind. And he's running through this wheat field, and he's a little boy. He's in elementary school. And, I mean, that field is almost taller than him. You can barely see his head going through it. And then he's got to climb this barbed wire fence, and when he jumps down, he falls, but, he's okay. He gets back up, and he runs into town, and he's talking to his neighbor. And he's telling him, could you please, my mom wants to know if you could please come out to our house, because I guess the old man owns the property that backs up to them, or maybe owns part of their property or something, that she had either heard or seen the creature, or something's out there again. And he said,
they had seen it because he described it as a hairy monster.
Yeah, okay. And as I'm retelling it, I can't remember exactly what he's saying, but I can picture it exactly, how it plays out. And so the old man, he's in there talking, Mr. Willie, I think is his name, and he's in there talking with his friends, and they're just all having a good old time.
Good old boy.
Yeah. And he said, now go back and tell your mama that I'll be over there. There ain't nothing there, but I'll be over there again first thing in the morning, or something like that. He's like, okay, and you could tell that the kid is, and why, I never understood, why is the mom sending him? It's about to get dark.
You could tell he's scared.
You can tell he's scared. So it shows him running back, and it's
through the field.
Yeah, the sun's about to go down. Either, I think right before he gets to the house, you hear the Boggy Creek monster off in the distance. You don't see anything, but you hear him off in the distance making noises. And you just put yourself.
No, you hear him roar.
Yeah.
You hear him yell, and the kid just freezes, and he's looking towards the tree line.
He doesn't see anything, and then he's able.
But he knows he's there.
Yeah. Then he's able to get in the house and close the door. Then he looks out the window.
That happens while he's in the field. So he's like probably too far from either Mr. Willie's, or he's too far from home to, it's not like he can just quickly get back to one or the other. He's like probably close to the midway point, if not the midway point, and he hears this, and he just freezes and looks at the tree line. He's probably thinking, good night, that thing can see me.
Yeah.
Even though I can't see it.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
Not like he could just go back. I mean, it's like he's either got to go one way or the other.
Right, and he already fell getting over that barbed wire fence. And so he has to climb over it again. And, man, you just, at least me, I have a problem with putting myself in the situation and in the person's shoes in the movies. And a lot of times I don't breathe, and I know other people are like that too. I realize I haven't breathed this whole time, or, you know, I'm clutching the blanket on my lap and it's just, my hands are nothing, you know, they're just completely wet and the blanket's all crumpled. And so you're just putting yourself in this little kid's situation thinking, oh my gosh, and it's getting dark and he's out there all by himself. And we're only assuming the mom's home. We don't see anybody else. I just realized that. You don't see anybody
That's so true.
He could be in that house by himself.
That's so true.
That just made it a whole lot scarier right there.
But see, that's the thing about Boggy Creek. There's intense stories throughout, all the way up to the end. It ends on an intense story.
It does.
There's a story of the girls, the teenage girls who are home alone.
Oh my gosh, there's three of them, yeah.
Of course it's dark, she looks out the window and she sees the Boggy Creek monster. You can only see the silhouette. You only always see the silhouette. Mm-hmm. You can never make out anything. Approaching their house, and so she's freaking out, and the girls are freaking out, and they're pulling out the shotgun, and of course, panicking. They're trying to load the shotgun, and they can't get the bullets in there, because when you're in a panic mode, simple things like that are the hardest to do.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, this thing is like, you know, screaming, and they're freaking out, so apparently, they had a rough night until the next morning when all these teenagers and kids are home alone. What the heck with these country folks?
Because back then, that's how it was. You didn't think about it back then. I mean, you think about this. Before it came out in the 70s, but, you know, the accounts were, well, I guess they were probably in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
So
there's that story. There's a story of the two couples, the two brothers and their wives. They rent out this place, and the husbands have to work at night.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when the husbands are at work in the middle of the night, the two women and the kids, you know, the little kids, like infants, are home alone, and here comes, you know, Boggy Creek Monster has to ruin it for everybody again.
I know! He's such a party crasher.
I know, he is. He really is. He needs to learn some manners.
No wonder he got his feelings hurt, because they had heard about him.
They get attacked one night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the husbands come home, they're freaking out, or they even get the landlord to come over, and he checks out the place, goes,
yeah.
Oh, it's fine. You know, so then, like, a couple of days pass, cousin and a nephew, another young adult guy, and a young teenage kid, they come to visit for a while, so they're staying with him.
Mm-hmm.
So then that night, it's the two husbands, the two wives, the infants, then the cousin, the two cousins, mm-hmm. uncle, whatever he is. So then they're all there together, so you think, oh, it's safety in numbers.
Oh, no.
No.
Uh-uh.
No!
That just made it worse.
Yeah, that's just more food for the Boggy Creek Monster, you know. That's all he's concerned about.
Right.
That's more grub.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, here he comes, party crashing again. Mm-hmm. And it's intense. The guy, uncle, let's just say he's the uncle, the young adult guy. Out of the three men, he's the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
Boggy Creek Monster comes and attacks, and the two men, they get their rifles, they're firing blindly. They're always firing blindly.
I know.
They think they scare them off, so they all get settled in. Here's the funny part is the uncle goes into the restroom. So he's just trying to enjoy himself a nice poop. You know,
really?
You know.
You had to take it there again?
Well, he was sitting down. Unless he's one of those that likes to pee sitting. You know, come on.
Well, I know, but you had to say those words.
So, sure enough, he's sitting down. Once again, Boggy Creek Monster, big pain in the butt that he is, he comes and rattles the window, like, pulls the screen off.
Yeah, he reaches in there and scares the guy right off the toilet.
Yeah, scared the you-know-what out of him.
Yeah.
And so he of course, runs off. They're all freaking out, and they're all on the porch again, and the Boggy Creek Monster actually grabs a hold of the uncle and tries to rattle him, but he pulls away and busts through the screen door in shock. He goes into shock. So they actually have to rush him to the hospital.
Yeah, that's their priority now, is getting him to the hospital.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the whole movie just builds up to this crescendo of this incident, you know, like the of all the intense incidences in the movie, builds up to the biggest one. I mean, it is not, this movie is not a letdown when it comes to just very well-told, well-executed reenactments of these things that happen.
I think what's neat is the little boy who grows up to be the narrator at the very end. It's him again, and he's at his old house, and he goes in there.
abandoned, obviously.
Yeah, and he's saying that he can still hear the noises that it makes. So it's just mm-hmm. kind of a neat way to end it. But isn't there a monster quest on?
It's almost like he made peace with it.
Yeah, that's nice. Isn't there a monster quest on? It's called the swamp monster.
Well, there's one. I think there's one actually on the Boggy Creek monster itself.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about
specifically.
Yeah, because I remember. I believe it's in that show where they still talk about how the guy was in shock.
Yeah,
that was a big thing that he was literally in shock. But I think out of this whole show, I mean, I love pretty much every bit of it. I think my favorites are probably the end of it, and I like the part with the girls and the trying to load the rifle and everything. But I think one of the funniest things is when the kids are out playing in the field,
yes.
And they see it. And, remember the Cersei?
It's like three little kids and the mom.
Yeah, the Cersei family too. That's another good one. We didn't even tell that one.
Mary Beth.
Yeah.
The baby's cold. Go close the window, Mary Beth.
I'm too lazy to get up myself. That's actually one of my favorite parts. Probably my most favorite part. But anyway, this story, it's like two or three kids out playing in the field, and they see the monster. And so they come running back home, and they're telling their mom, and their accents are just so strong. Mama, mama, we saw there's a big monster out in the field, you know, really strong.
You do that really good, a little bit too good.
Well, thank you. And so she's telling them, now hush up, daddy's sleeping or something, and if you don't be quiet, I'm going to get the switch after you. Like, they're trying to tell you that they almost got eaten.
Daddy's had a long night. He was up all night making his moonshine.
Well, they take the mom back out there, and it's funny. She always reminds me of my mom. She's got the long, dark hair. She's kind of got the same build, but my mom's legs are a lot longer than that. So every time I see her, I just think of my mom, even though she didn't act that way. My mom was a lot more brave than this lady was. So anyway, they take her out there, and she's like, see? And so they're like, right over there. They're pointing right over there, like it's standing there. And she's like, I don't see anything. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. And then it kind of creeps out of the woods, shows
up. Yeah, it's there.
And then she
freezes.
She's just frozen, and the kids take off, and they're screaming, and they're running, and she's like backing up, and she's like, don't run, don't run, you know, because whenever you see a dog, you're not supposed to run off. And so then she realizes she's standing there all by herself.
By herself.
She turns around, she starts running, and she's still screaming, don't run! Don't run! Is there all
and she's running! It's awesome. It's awesome.
That was really funny. But yeah, Legend of Boggy Creek. Awesome.
Well, for all the intense moments, there's some really neat downtime moments, and that mostly focuses around the Crabtree family. You don't want to give away too much. We've already pretty much spoiled most of the movie.
Yeah,
but
spoiler alert.
Yeah,
the Crabtree family is great.
Yeah, you know, they focus on the father and the uncle and the son, Travis. It's the whole story with the Crabtree family. It's really neat. It's probably, as far as the movie goes, it is the highlight. When you take away like the intense scare factor, the Crabtree family is almost like the underlining story that kind of goes through it, and it's really neat. Definitely, Legend of Boggy Creek, you got to see it. Mm-hmm. Mysterious Monsters, you got to see it. In Search Ofs, obviously, Leonard Nimoy, come on, you got to see it. These others, if you can get your hands on it or at least see it on YouTube, they're fun too.
There's nothing beats seeing Leonard Nimoy in bell-bottom pants, plaid pants, sitting down in a chair with a big old black mustache, sitting down right in front of a blazing fire in this cabin. I mean, come on.
He's kind of got like this Lando Calrissian mustache.
Yeah,
going on.
And he's just a cool dude.
Yeah, really is.
Okay, so I think we should go ahead and wrap it up. Any last thoughts?
We knew this was going to happen. This was going to be run into like a long episode, but we don't care because it was fun. Hopefully it was fun for y'all.
Yeah, it was, even though Eddie talked the whole time.
Yeah, well, hey, that's what they like.
Oh, no, that's not what I heard, but anyway.
But yeah, just real quick before we zip out of here, big news. Big news.
Big.
By the time you hear this, it will literally be days away, and that is AllCon. We mentioned it earlier that it is pretty much consumed. All of us here at the JCU Podcast Network, we're all going to be there. Andy, like we said last week, Andy is flying in.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be there. You definitely want to be there just for that alone. but we're all going to be there. But this is the thing. Figments, we're going to have our first live presentation. Not one, but two.
Woohoo!
Yeah. So if you want to be part of the Figments show,
ooh,
come out to AllCon. That's all-con.org. ALL-CON.org. Get your tickets. We have two live performances. The first one is going to be Friday, this coming Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So, what time? Well, let me give you the dates for, if it's not the week that you're listening to, then you've already missed it, but AllCon, March 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th. It's a four-day event. We are going to be on Friday and Saturday, so that's the 14th and 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Friday we are doing a live episode. Is going to be Bigfoot, Mothman, and Other Mysterious Monsters. And that's going to be Friday, 11 p.m., 11 at night, 11 to 11:45 in the Addison Theater. All this is on the website in case you don't get it. Our second live episode is going to be Roswell, Area 51, and beyond. It's going to be Saturday afternoon from 4 to 4:45. And that's going to be in the Pecan, however you say it, room.
Let's say Pecan.
So Friday, 11 o'clock at night, Addison Theater. That's going to be the Bigfoot cryptid episode. Saturday, 4 in the afternoon, Pecan room. That's going to be the UFO aliens episode. So let me tell you, if you want to be part of Figments, come out, sit in the audience. We're going to have the audience interact with us, so bring us questions. If you have a story, dang, if you have a story or sighting, please show up and talk to us.
Oh, yeah.
You can be a part of the next episode of Figments. That is happening this week, AllCon, all-con.org, March 13th through 16th. Get your tickets. There's going to be tons of stuff.
Mm.
Cole and I are going to be doing a live episode of the Rancor Pit. Plus, we will be doing a Rancor Pit Star Wars game for everyone called Don't Lose Your Geek Card Star Wars Edition. Cole, Catherine, Andy, Bobby, all of us who have a voice here on the Jedi Cole Podcast Network, we're all going to be there. We're all running different events. All 4 days, one of us is doing something multiple times each day. So come out and see us. It's going to be fun, but especially if you're a fan of Figments and you want to be part of the episode and you're local, or heck, if you want to fly in, definitely come see us on Friday night for the Bigfoot episode or Saturday afternoon for the Roswell alien episode.
And do you know how much tickets are?
Something like maybe 35 or 45, but it is worth it because literally there is so much going on in those 4 days. There's
mm-hmm.
something like 300 different panels, events, games. There's like 300 things to choose from. So it is money well spent.
Mm. All right. Well, you know what? I don't think I have to say any last regards because I think you pretty much said it all.
That's right.
So we'll go ahead and end this now. It was a great episode. I had lots of fun, and I hope you guys did too. And
mm-hmm.
you know what? When you're thinking about all these things, keep asking yourself, are they real or are they Figments? Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.
Figments is a production of EdMed Art Studios and hosted by the Jedi Cole Universe. You can find us at www.jedicole.com. and www.eddiemedina.com. Thank you for listening, and keep searching for the unknown.